Hey guys, just wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening to Sidebar Forever. If you like the show, please subscribe to us at sidebarforever.com, as well as share episodes of the podcast on your social media. That way, new listeners can find us as well. In a movie, a death scene is not unlike a dramatic scene, a love scene, or even an action scene. They all serve to advance the story and make an impact on the viewer. But sometimes when a despicable character in a film meets a gruesome end, it can also be enjoyable. On today's episode, Dwight and Swain discuss the most outrageous, shocking, and in certain cases, meaningful deaths in popular TV and film. We're talking Hans Gruber falling off the Nakatomi, Quint getting gobbled up by the Great White, the off-screen passing of James Evans on Good Times, Carrie's abusive mother being telekinetically crucified by her daughter, and a whole bunch more. We also get into surprise deaths, like Ned Stark losing his head in season one of Game of Thrones, as well as deaths that move a central character forward, like the untimely demise of King T'Chaka in Marvel's Civil War. And as always, thanks for listening.
Good morning, Dr. Silverman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble.
Clearly, I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
All right, we'll save that for the Depeche pod.
Exactly.
The Depeche pod.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Well, man, we thought we would have some fun. In movies, you have action scenes, fight scenes, love scenes. You have action set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You have dramatic scenes. You have all kinds of scenes. But Dwight and I started talking about, like, death scenes in movies and television shows, too, to some extent. But the death scenes and like, kind of, like, some of the funny, outrageous ones, the crazier ones,
right?
And what some of the death scenes mean, because as we started talking about it and trying to, you know, suss out this as a topic, I started thinking, I was like, okay, well, there's kind of basically four categories, and I'm sure, like, you know, writers and screenwriters will say, you know, that they're, you know, there's actual, you know, names for these things, but there's, like, surprise deaths, inevitable deaths.
Right.
What I would call plot or story forward deaths, and then deserved deaths.
Yes, <sir. laughs> which is the category I'm most familiar with.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one that's the most fun, yo. But
he had it coming.
But I was going to ask you, man. Like when you were a kid, can you remember maybe as a teenager or just as a young person? The first death that you remember seeing in a television show or on a movie that actually moved you, where you was like, oh, I'm kind of moved by this.
Yeah. Strangely enough, man. But it wasn't a movie theater. I saw it when I was watching. My pops liked to go see Kung Fu movie flicks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a violent fucking death, dude. I didn't see it coming, and I, you know, I guess if I had known more about the genre at the age of maybe I was at, I would have, you know, seen it. But it was violent, dude. It was like this dude kicks this guy through a wall, and then he proceeds to like pop his eyes out, dude.
Oh,
and it looked real to me, because it wasn't, you know. And the guy, dude's screaming the entire time, dude. And he's got like this long hair, And blood all is blood, because you know one thing about Hong Kong movie gore is it's very gory, it's exceptionally gory. So
yeah,
whatever the minor blood you would be losing ordinarily as a regular human being,
yeah,
it's like twice as
yeah.
copious.
Yeah, when you
twice as thick. So this guy's got like a gallon of blood dripping down his shirt, and it's like I was horrified by that. Shit fucked me up for a long time, dude.
Wow,
I couldn't watch a Hong Kong movie. So the first time I saw death was that death, and I understood my pop said he deserved it, and he got it the way he should have got it, but. It didn't, to my young eyes, it was like, okay, that's not what I,
yeah,
that's not what I expected to see.
It didn't sit well with you, yo.
No, it didn't, man. It rocked me, dude. It rocked me.
Yeah.
So
I think for me, man, it might be something like the Mac.
Okay.
You remember the Mac?
I do remember the Mac, yo.
Okay. So like my parents would see, you know, they'd be watching the blaxploitation movies in the 70s, and I'm a kid.
Right.
You know, and they'd be, you know, covering your eyes. We go to the drive-in and sit in the back, turn around. Turn around in this part, you know, anytime some titties come out, turn around, or anytime, you know, any kind of, you know, any kind of extreme
nudity,
extreme violence, you know, they, you know,
right.
they want to cover your eyes. And I remember there's a scene in the Mac where he had this dude and he took some like hypodermic needles that you would use for like a heroin overdose, and he was jamming them in the guy's back.
Damn.
And the guy was, and I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I think the other one was in Coolie High when Lawrence Hilton Jacobs' character was getting beat up by the thugs under the L platform, the elevated platform, and they hit him and he spins around and he bumps his head against the girder holding up the platform and it breaks his neck.
Oh shit!
And he falls to the ground and the thugs are like kicking him like get up and he's not moving. And like kick
him. Because he can't.
Because he can't. Yeah, he's fucking dead. And then get up.
Hell yeah.
Get up. And then at the end of the movie, Glenn Turman's character, who I think was called Preach. I think his nickname was Preach.
Okay.
When he found out that his buddy had died, you know, he was like devastated by it. And they had that whole thing in the movie where they would, you know, pour out some liquor for the homies that wasn't there.
Right.
And he poured some out for his boy. And then he starts running down the street, and then they do like a freeze frame like they used to do back in the 70s and 80s.
Right, right.
And then he, you know, they tell the story that, you know, after all of this, you know, he leaves his neighborhood and becomes a writer and all this kind of stuff. But I remember that death because I felt Preach's pain, you know, that his boy had died, yo.
Right, right. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hard, especially for a kid, man, for the first time experiencing that sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to watch cartoon deaths. You watch it all the time. Tom and Jerry running into a wall, you know. Jerry goes through the wall and Tom splats on the wall and, you know.
Yeah.
Or Tom's chasing Jerry through to a mouse hole and he can't get through the mouse hole until Tom gets caught up and gets hurt, but Jerry gets away scot-free. But, you know, when it gets into real violence, real just demonstrations of actual violence, it's a whole other level of understanding and conversation for a kid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel you on that, man. I feel you on that, man. How do I say goodbye to what we had, the good times that made us laugh outweigh the bad. I thought we'd get to see forever.
And I was going to ask you, like, as we started talking about some of the different categories and some of the ones that really made us laugh. You and I were talking on the phone earlier.
Right.
And we were having particular fun with the actor who played Frank Nitti in The Untouchables. when Elliot Ness threw his ass off the street, right. off the roof. Right. Waving his arms and shit.
right. It's like this scene from, it's like there's a appropriate line that goes with that from The Chronicles of Riddick, where he's fighting the character Lord Darkness, whatever his name is at the time, and there's this common thing where it's known that if you let him snatch your soul instantly, it's okay, but if you don't succumb to the will of the Overlord, you fall forever. So it's like one of the things that what's her name?
Tandy Newton.
Tandy Newton says to him, it's like if you resist, it'll hurt much more. And Lord Darkness says, it's like bow now or fall forever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, that's what happened to Frank Nitti. He fell forever, yo. It's like, he's like, He's like, it was funny, man.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few like that too, man. They're just like deservedly so, because he was a bastard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's start with the deserved deaths. Because those, since we're talking about Nitty, who was a bastard, and he killed Sean Connery's character.
Right.
So he absolutely deserved it. But one of the ones that I thought about, well, actually what we talked about earlier was the actor who played Dick Jones in RoboCop.
Yeah, yeah, Richard Dick Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. And when he fell to his timely death, you know.
Now, the funny thing about that guy, man, that plays Dick Jones.
Yeah.
His name was Ronnie Cox.
Oh yeah, it is Ronnie Cox. Yeah, I couldn't remember the actor's name. It is Ronnie Cox. Yeah.
So I'm like, come on, man. You need a name change, dude, or don't play dicks anymore.
But he definitely deserved it. And one of my favorites. And it's not a, like, he wasn't the grand villain, but one of my favorite fall to your death deaths was in Above the Law, Steven Seagal and Pam Grier.
Okay, okay.
So there's one guy, he's kind of like a B-level villain henchman, or like a, maybe even like a C-level, but he keeps showing up trying to get Steven Seagal's character.
Right.
And so they end up in this parking garage on like the 10th floor. And Steven Seagal's in the car, and he's, you know, behind the car shooting at Steven Seagal. So Steven Seagal puts it in reverse and backs into the guy. Okay. And so the guy's hanging on the back of the car. Remember that? So he's hanging on the back of Seagal's car, and Seagal is you know, is careening through this parking garage on the 10th floor. And then Seagal backs the car through the wall of the parking garage so that the tail end is hanging off.
Right.
So it pushes him through a wall. He falls 10 stories. He lands on the elevated train platform. And when he lands, you see him hit the third rail and you see it go zzz. and then the train comes and cuts him in half.
Oh.
So he just got it all the way bad, yo.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
But
yeah, I mean, they're coming back from that one for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But probably the biggest one for us has got to be Hans Gruber's.
Oh yeah.
You know, which was totally deserved. I mean, he was
right
as charismatic and as smooth as he was in those Italian suits. You know, those double-breasted suits he was wearing.
Yeah, he was a bastard.
He
yeah.
deserved. He's a bastard.
Yeah, man.
He's an absolute bastard.
I am exceptionally good cook, mister.
Yeah, 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 yeah. some other ones I thought about was Mary White, Carrie's mother in the movie Carrie from the 70s with Sissy Spacek and John Travolta.
Wow. You going back there, yo?
Yeah, okay, yo. Because she was horrible, yo. She was abusive to her daughter, yo.
Yeah, she was, yo.
And then
was,
when them
yo.
Powers kicked in, it was over for Ma, yo. My Dukes was gone, yo.
She deserved it too,
she
yeah.
She did. She was terrible.
She had it coming.
Another one is our boy, I can't remember if his name was pronounced Tot or Tote. Major Arnold Tote from Raiders of the Lost Ark. At the end when they opened the Ark of the Covenant and he melts.
Yeah, yeah. Melting. I'm melting.
Yeah, he deserved it. And that's another one. The witch from The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, yeah, melting just like
her. Yes, yo. What a world! What a world!
Yeah, you know what? That was No, as a kid, that fucked me up too.
Because that did.
Yeah. All you saw was like, well, we saw her sister at first because the house landed on top of her, and you saw her shoes.
Sir, underneath. Let's just talk about all the creepy things in The Wizard of Oz. When those feet curled up.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, no.
that's not natural.
That's not
that
natural.
That is not natural.
And then those flying monkeys, them creepy bastards.
Yeah, yeah.
Sir,
yeah, yeah.
Come on.
They were creepy, yo. Yeah, they were creepy, yo. They were creepy, yo. Because they were very like they were well behaved. So when she gave a command, they obeyed.
Yeah.
You know? And they were. They were legion, yo.
So yes.
Look at this. he looked at the skies, and it was like, it's like easily you could see the sky as far as you go. They were like, they were all over the sky, dude, like planes from a distance, like a bunch of World War II bombers about to drop.
Yes, yo, you expected to hear fucking Wagner play, yo.
Yeah.
You're so right, man.
It was crazy, man. Wizard of Oz is creepy as shit.
Truly. Another funny one to me, and this one is more modern day, was Stuntman Mike from Death Proof. Remember the Kurt Russell character who was terrorizing the girls?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They had that, Rosario Dawson?
It was Rosario Dawson and Zoe, I forgot her last name, the stunt woman turned actress.
Okay.
Yeah. And,
And
they basically just kicked the shit out of him, yo.
Yeah.
At the end, it was like, okay, take your turns.
Right? Right? Yeah, man. That entire Death Proof was a good series because Rose McGowan played the cheerleader with the
machine gun leg.
The machine gun leg.
Well, that was actually Planet Terror, wasn't it? That wasn't Death Proof. Wasn't Death Proof?
It was Planet Terror.
Yeah.
Because it was two together. Yeah. Yeah, man. And she just, one dude came in and he pulled a gun on her and she shot him with the leg and he blew up.
Yeah. Of course he blew up because it was a Robert Rodriguez movie, and when you get shot, you get blown across the room, you explode.
Exactly, that's what you do, man.
Couple of the older ones, yo, and this one may be something you hadn't ever seen, but White Heat with James Cagney. There's the point where like he's a bastard throughout the whole movie. He's a criminal, kind of on the run, but at the end of the movie, like he gets shot, and then he shoots this gas tank to blow it up or whatever, and he says, he makes this big speech about, I made it, Ma! Finally made it on top! You know, and he makes this big dramatic speech about his death. But,
right,
like, with a lot of these characters, with the deserved ones, it's not a matter of if they're going to die, it's just when they're going to die.
Right.
And how amazing is it going to be that they're going to die? Because, you want them, you're waiting for it. You're salivating. Another one, and we talked about this one endlessly on the show before, but Bennett in Commando.
Oh yeah.
Bennett in Commando.
I will kill you,
Matrix.
Right.
Let off some steam, Bennett.
Bennett, right? You want to stick it in. You want to feel the pipe twisting. Like, what movie are we talking about here again? What is this rap we're talking about?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Man.
Bennett.
Right?
But what's funny about the whole thing with Commando is obviously what we talked about on the one-liner show about how, you know, like the deaths of certain characters became punctuated by a funny thing that people would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the other day I was watching Lethal Weapon 2. And remember when Danny Glover, he goes in his house, he leaves Leo in the car and he goes in his house to look at the videotape and he sees a shadow behind him. He says, Leo, I thought I told you to stay in the car. And it's the South African bad guy. And so they start fighting.
Right.
And then he gets the nail gun and doop, gets him in the forehead and then he backs up to the wall where the plastic is and he's all, and then the guy comes out from behind the plastic and grabs him, and then he gets that guy, boop, 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 and he's nailed them both. And you're like, okay, come on, man.
Yeah, man. Definitely. The one-liners were punctuators. It really helped a lot, dude.
Right.
I enjoyed them, man.
Right.
They're really cool.
And I think for deserved deaths, for an audience member, for a film goer, you know, somebody who's watching, you know, the movie or the television show, what have you, like, they have no emotional meaning to you other than satisfaction.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, right. Like, there's no emotion, there's no, like, anything. It's just, you're almost, like, salivating for it. It's almost like the Roman Colosseum or something where it's like, oh, no. I came to see this motherfucker die.
Yeah. Like, the entire time, like, I can't wait for this bastard to be killed, man. It was like one of my favorites is, we were talking about earlier, was Tim Burton's Batman, the first one with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he's on the edge of the temple or of the tall clock tower.
Yeah.
And his fat ass is dancing around and he's like, ooh, hee 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 hee. It's like, a one to pick up. and Batman lassos his leg to the gargoyle and the end of the building, and he can't. The weight of the gargoyle is too much for him to hold on to the actual rung of the ladder.
Yeah,
and he falls. And as he falls, it's like this stupid
this goofy look on his face.
Yeah, yo, it's like wow. And you get down to the bottom, he's got one of those laughing boxes in his pocket. So he's still laughing in his death. Or at least people think he's still laughing in his death. And that's one of the things I liked about how that particular film ended. Also, how Prince incorporated that into the Bat Dance for
Batman. Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah,
it was great.
Yeah, that was a great soundtrack, man. What about as far as like inevitable deaths?
Okay.
So, the way I'm framing it, and I'm not a writer, you know, per se,
right.
But
it's okay. Right.
An inevitable death is where you know it's coming. It's gonna come at some point, and you may or may not be happy about it or ready for it, but you know it's gonna be there. And sometimes it's, you know, when you get introduced to the two buddy cops, and the one buddy cop is the sweet one with the family. And you're like, oh, I know he ain't gonna make it, you know,
right.
Or you know, or the aunt or something like that. And you mentioned earlier, like you know, Uncle Ben. But well, a good example of it is
Miles Dyson. Right.
Where if it wasn't getting shot up by the SWAT team, we know the nuclear explosion was gonna do it.
Right.
But that one was a rough one, because I mean,
it's almost like his last heartbeat was going in.
Yeah, and it's like boom. He's like, oh man, and you felt so bad for him, because like you were pointing out when we were talking earlier today, he's just a scientist doing his job and just
right.
You know, asking questions and trying to go where the evidence
technology
leads.
Takes him. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know how much longer I can hold this.
Fall back! Everybody out! Fall back now! Go, go, go!
Did you ever see To Live and Die in L.A.?
Parts of it. Not all of it.
With William Peterson and Willem Dafoe? John Turturro's in it. Dean Stockwell was in it. Robert Downey's father, Robert Downey Sr. is in it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. He was in it.
Okay.
Very good black character actor, Steve James. He was in it, too. But anyway, William Peterson's character is like a rogue cop.
Okay.
You know, and it's a crime movie. It's not an action movie per se. It's like a crime thriller. But he gets killed at the end. And you're like, you know, you kind of know it's coming because he's so rogue, where you're like, okay, he's done enough where it's like, okay, even if you can get away with it within the framework of your world, we as the audience will never accept you because you're just so bad and so dirty.
Right.
And you're so out of pocket. You know,
right.
Right. But it was expected as the movie went on. And another one like that for me, where it's inevitable, but they trick you, was in Jaws.
Okay.
Remember in Jaws with Quint, when they hired Quint to come tell, to have him chase the shark and to kill the shark.
Right. Right.
And Quint, you know, when he starts out, you know, he's a smart ass and he's kind of giving everybody, you know, shit. And you know,
he's Captain Ahab, man.
Yeah. Well, but before that, though, he's just the professional that you call in
right.
to perform a task. And he's very emotionally unattached from his job. He's just, I'm just going to do my thing and then we're going to catch the shark. But once the shark started eluding them and started fucking with them and seemed like his adversary, then he became
aggressive and
the guy who was chasing. Yeah, he became the guy who's chasing the great white whale. Right. And that's when it became inevitable that, oh, this is not going to end well for Quint.
Right. It's true, man. It's true. It's true. You know, it was like, you know what? I would, something along those lines too. Like, you didn't know how it was going to end, but you knew the movie's called Predator. The first Predator, for example.
Yes.
You thought about, okay. So, you know, ultimately, you know, these guys are being tossed into a jungle with this alien creature, because we knew from being the outside looking in, that's what the movie was about.
Right.
But they had no idea what it was about. But you knew, like, okay, most of these guys are going to die, or the Predator alien is going to die, because before that, there was no franchise guaranteed for it.
Right.
You know, so it was just a matter of going to the movie and enjoying the movie for what it was at that time.
Right.
And you know, okay, you know, Arnold's not signing on to die. It's an Arnold movie. So Arnold's the first one in the credits.
Of course, yeah.
So you know, everybody else is probably going to get wiped out during the process, man. So, you know, but I was surprised at the end that as many of them didn't survive as didn't survive. You know, I was thinking maybe, okay, a couple of these crack commandos would embed themselves, you know, follow the pattern of this creature instinctually. Because that's what they do. They follow patterns of things for a long period of time. They're prey.
Right.
People are searching out. Follow the patterns, learn his patterns, and then subterfuge. And that's what, you know, saved Arnold's ass, actually, was a subterfuge from getting, you know, caught up in that mud and burying him, you know, using that as this. And he realized it, too. It was an accidental thing that worked to his benefit in the end. But after that, even the Predator got wise to that. But, as much killing as he was doing, you know, you wanted the Predator to be dead by the end. But at the same time, I was like, would he really be dead by the end? You know?
Well, you know, it's funny because, like what you're talking about a minute ago, as far as the inevitability of his crew dying,
right?
It's kind of like a thing. I think they call it 10 Little Indians, where it's like eventually you're just watching them fall one by one and get picked off one by one,
right?
And once you saw how efficient the Predator was, you were like, "Oh yeah, you guys are
yeah." You're toast. Game over, man. Game over.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it was definitely that. But I was thinking, too, like back to like Rogue One. That's another one where it's almost like a kamikaze mission where I was like, I didn't even expect Jyn Erso to survive. But I knew everybody else involved. Yeah, none of y'all are coming back.
Right.
You know,
right.
You've already told us this is a death mission. You know, there's no parachutes. There's no life vests, you know.
That's true.
There's no helmets because you're not going to make it, you know.
Right, man. There was talk that one time where Jyn Erso was going to make it, where she's going to survive.
Oh, really?
I don't know how they're going to play it into the future of what Star Wars became. But yeah, there was talk at one point where there was an option for her to be her and old boy who they're making a television series out of for Disney Plus.
Ahmed. I know you're talking about the Captain something or other.
Captain Endor, Andor,
yeah,
or whatever
yeah,
his name
exactly,
is.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah. Yeah, they were going to survive together, you know, and walk over to the sunset. Yeah. But, you know, that's like, no, that can't be. Not for how New Hope begins or whatever.
Exactly. Keeping it on Star Wars, which I know is your first love. Okay.
One of them.
in The Force Awakens, yo. We knew Han Solo was not going to survive to the end of the movie, and you knew it was absolutely inevitable when he walked up on that skywalk.
Oh yeah, one-way platform.
Yeah, and I was like, oh come on, dog, really?
right. Killed by your own son, yeah.
Yeah, the last time a father and son ended up on a skywalk up above or whatever, we see what happened. You know what happened?
Exactly. One of them took a skywalk, yeah.
As soon as I saw
really survive that.
Well, as soon as I saw Kylo and he said, "Ben," and I was like, right. "Oh, here we go."
right.
Here we go. All right, hon. It's been good, dog.
Right.
It's been
especially
good.
especially given the way that the overall nature of how Harrison Ford's held the character in such high esteem anyway over the years.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So you know, it was like, it was game over.
What about your boy, John Coffey in Green Mile?
No.
I mean,
what a way to go.
Look, forget the fact that he was on death row. You just knew he wasn't going to make it. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
okay. From the very beginning, yo.
Yes.
Yeah, yo.
You like, you got your magic powers and you helping these white folks out. You know they're not going to, you know he's not going to see it, the light of day. You know he's not going to see tomorrow, dog.
And you know, it was more like a breakdown of that time period where you knew where you were.
Yeah.
Where he was, and the fact that he's like being real cozy to these two little white girls. Like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
You know, how's that going to look to the public in that particular period of time? Not good.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, what are they supposed to expect? What do you expect the overall mentality these people are at this time? It's like, not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just keep your hands to yourself. Look down, black man, look down.
You're right, yo. And even that whole, I need to see you, boss.
Boss? Man, I hated that for him, man.
I hated that role too.
So bad for him, man.
I did too.
It's like, wow. So much more a better actor than that, dude.
Yeah. But as it relates to inevitable deaths, I'll tie that in with surprise deaths. The movie Alien, who's the actor who had the first chest bursting?
Oh,
it wasn't Harry Dean Stanton, was it?
No. It was John Hurt.
Yeah. Shocked the shit out of everybody.
It really did, Ben. It was very disgusting.
I mean, because we were all like, you knew something was going to be wrong with him when this thing latched onto his face. It's like, and they said it was a tube going down his chest. You were like, okay, is he going to explode? I mean, you know, what's going to happen?
Is this thing going to take over his body and gradually mutate?
Exactly. Is he going to mutate or something? What's going to happen to him?
Right. Gradually.
Yeah. No. It laid an egg inside his chest.
Ugh. And a hungry egg, sir.
And it.
Right through his thoracic vertebrae.
Yeah. And then ran off. And then ran off like a damn, like the damn. Yeah, yo.
Like a little mini me and shit, yo. To go down the little road runner, yo.
Yeah.
You couldn't catch him, yo.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Don't touch it.
But that one was a surprise, but it led to the inevitable. Once you saw the creature become full size,
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they gone. Again, it's like 10 millennia. It's just one after the other. Boop, boop. Who's going to get got and when and how? But they're, you know, none of them are gonna make it.
Yeah.
But I think part of the big thing for the surprises is clearly, you know, obviously as an audience member, you don't know,
mm-hmm.
but also like the ability to surprise you. Like Marvin getting shot in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the last thing you expected to see.
Right.
What?
Right? Did you see? He's talking to all of a sudden you see a bump and all of a sudden you see. Yeah. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah.
You know?
And, I was thinking about also too Samuel Jackson's character in Deep Blue Sea.
Okay. Yeah.
Remember that?
Well, he's giving a speech.
Yes, yo. He was in full Samuel Jackson mode, yo.
We're gonna get out of this. We're all gonna be fine. And then
wait, what?
He ragdolled his ass like Hulk did Loki in the show.
Yeah. And as surprise deaths go, that's certainly not the first time we've seen something like that. But like in the kind of modern era, and I was going to ask you about this just because my wife always mentions it. Ned Stark in Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah.
What is the situation with that one, yo?
You never saw it coming. I mean, here's the thing. You know, there's this long legacy with Sean Bean.
Right.
I mean, it's a long joke, long-standing joke. But I wasn't really hip to that joke at that time. So when the show starts off with their house going to be part of the he's friends with the with the Baratheons. The Baratheons are married to the Lannisters, which is how they pretty much did things back in the day. You marry into a house, and you pretty much you get your social political standing or whatever. You can get, you know, your ability to maintain your own place and not be challenged for it, right?
Yeah.
So, long story made short, Stark, since he was a character that was sitting on the throne in the promo pieces, everybody thought that he was going to be there to the very end.
Right.
Right? And when the young prince had him cut his head off, you know, that was like, people were just livid. They were like, what the hell happened? How could that be? You know, how could it's a main character.
Right.
He's got to go through to the end. It's a given he's going to go through to the end, you know? So that's what happened. So that's why everybody was so appalled by it. But everybody was, you start to see that from that, the way the showrunners set it up and the way that possibly the writers set it up was that it was in, you know, there were no surprises. There were always going to be surprises. Nobody's gonna get out of this alive. So you don't know who could die. Any elite character that you get attached to at any point in time could just die at any point in time. And that's what. And that was part of the magnetism of the show as much as anything, because any of the characters that were imperiled could very well pass from that peril and not survive.
Yeah.
And so many of the Stark men, you know, died. So many of the good people that you thought were worthy of, you know, nobility were outwitted and outsmarted by the Lannisters. So, yeah, so that's what happened to him, and Sean Bean bit the dust, and some people weren't surprised by it. Most people were surprised by it at the time.
Yeah.
Because you're always hoping at some point in time that they wouldn't repeat the curse. You know, it'll be a thing where, okay, we're going to set this guy up for that same payoff at the end, and it didn't change for him.
Yeah.
Because you know? Prior to that, he died in Lord of the Rings as Boromir. You know?
Oh,
So, but, and that's the first time I saw him dying, but everybody else apparently knew more about him than I did, so he always passed away.
Yeah. Some other surprise deaths, big and small, monumental, mundane, but just all over the place. You've got Donnie's character in The Big Lebowski, who's played by Steve Buscemi. He has like a heart attack and just dies.
Damn.
And and you didn't really see that coming.
Right.
Chubbs in Happy Gilmore. Remember Carl Weathers?
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. He dies. He dies in the movie, and so and in his ghostly form, I think he kind of like helps Happy, you know, finish his his tournament.
Damn. Damn.
But Martin Sheen's character in The Departed.
Okay.
Like he goes, he's a cop, you know, and he goes to meet like a CI or an informant, and they throw him off the roof.
Yeah, yo.
Splat. Remember that shit,
Waterboy
yo?
Style, bro. That shit fucked me up.
Yes.
Man. Yeah, so I'm really. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, wait a minute. That was Martin Sheen, though, dog.
Right.
You know, and Leonardo DiCaprio's character walks up on him as he goes splat. And then, like, you know, the people come and he's got to fake it like, you know, like he's just showing up just like they are and shit, yo.
Right, right.
I was like, damn.
Yeah, man.
That one definitely fucked me up.
Yeah, man.
An old one that was super surprising for audiences back then, and even now, if you watch the movie not knowing what's going on, is Psycho.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's two movies in one. It's a horror movie in the second half, but it's kind of like a crime mini heist noir. Movie, or crime noir in the beginning, in the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
And Janet Leigh is I think she's a pretty big star at the time.
Yeah, I think so too.
And she works for like an insurance company and she steals the money and she's on the run and then she checks in this hotel and, you know, Anthony Perkins character.
Perkins.
You know, he's like handsome guy, whatever. And you think, okay, well, maybe what a... And then all of a sudden she's in the shower and you see this shadowy figure come up to the curtain.
Wee! Is that you?
Wee! Wee! Wee!
Although it cuts his,
yeah, Yeah. Good. Although you never see any, you know, actual knife into flesh or whatever.
Right. Right.
But
all the cuts and film magic.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's kind of like a precursor to the Ned Stark thing you were talking about, where literally you didn't know that was going to happen to her. You thought, okay, like you said, it's a given. She's going to make it to the end of the movie. You know, whatever this movie is, she's going to get to the end of it. And either she's going to go to jail or she's going to get away. Not she's going to be killed by a slasher in some weird hotel on the side, motel on the side of the road.
Right.
So that was really, that one really took, I think, a lot of people by storm. And that was maybe, like I said, the precursor to all bets are off, you know.
Man, as you know what? Not just saying, man, I agree with you, man. There's another one that kind of, not necessarily in the same vein. It wasn't funny, but it was kind of funny at the same time. But you got a chance to see like an insight of how dastardly this guy was from Braveheart. Longshanks.
Okay.
Remember how his son had a suitor of sorts that was he was more into the gay suitor than he was into his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood up to Longshanks, and he's like, "Sir, who are you again?" You know, I'm definitely paraphrasing. He's like, "Who are you again?" He's like, "I'm sorry, sire. So I know I appreciate you giving me some of your opinions." He takes him over to the window and he pushes him out the window, and dares his son to say anything to him. It's like, wow, you are a bastard, sir.
You know, I've never seen Braveheart, yo.
Yeah, man, it's really good, man. You should see it.
Is it?
It's one of Mel Gibson's better movies, dude.
Okay.
Honestly, before he went all crazy psycho and shit.
Right.
But yeah.
Raging anti-Semite, but go ahead.
pretty much. But yeah, man. It was a good movie, man.
Yeah.
It was a good movie.
Another shocking one for me is as it relates to surprises is in No Country for Old Men.
Okay.
Josh Brolin's character finds the bag of money, and then Javier Bardem's character, Anton, starts chasing him.
Okay.
So for the first hour and some change of the, maybe hour and a half of the movie, you know, Josh Brolin's character is kind of like the protagonist. Like, you're like, and so what happens is he ends up getting killed by Anton, right?
Right.
But in a surprise move by the Coen brothers, they kill him off screen. Now, he's the main guy for an hour and something in the movie. And so the cops come running in. I forget who it was. Maybe it's Tommy Lee Jones' character. They come running in this place. And all you see is just Josh Brolin laying on the ground, shot up, and that's it. You didn't see how it happened, what the exchange was like. Was it a monumental, you know, was it a you know, mano a mano?
Showdown?
Yeah. Right, was it a showdown of any kind? Right. No. It was none of that. It's just he's gone. And there are other examples, like in the movie Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood and Morgan Freeman.
Okay, yeah.
Gene Hackman. Remember they strip...
That's a good movie, man.
It's a great movie, man. It's a great movie.
Yeah, man.
Remember they strip Morgan Freeman's character Ned down and they whip him? And you think, okay, they're just going to whip him. They kill him off screen, and then next time you see him, he's in a pine box sitting up in front of the saloon with nickels on his eyelids, yo. And it was like, damn, they just killed Morgan Freeman off screen in this mug.
Right.
But that was another one that got me. And another one, as far as off screen goes, and we talked about this one earlier today, too, was on Good Times.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
Yes, yo.
Damn! Yeah, yo, James, yo.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently, what what everybody says is it was about contract negotiation. But he wanted more money.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, yeah, no, your characters aren't worth that much to us. How can you do that to me? I don't know. The conversation went down. The scary part about that, man, was that for the longest period of time, it was weird. I didn't see him act anywhere else, man. Like, I didn't think...
you thought he really was gone, yo.
Yeah, dude. Man, I don't recall seeing that dude again until Coming to America, dude, honestly. You know, that was like in the 90s, I thought James almost was dead.
Well,
you know, for real.
He was in Die Hard 2, remember?
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. But your point is well taken, where he didn't have a lot of prominent. I mean, that was a high profile.
Yeah.
Gig for him. That made him a star.
Yeah. Weekly sitcom. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Especially in the black community. I mean, he was an absolute star. So for a while, for it to go from 70 something to finally, like, you know, 80, whatever, when Die Hard 2 came out.
No, you know what, though? Before that, I mean, I apologize. Let's roll back the clock. This is what.
Yeah.
The Roots.
Roots, yeah.
He was in Roots.
Kunta Kinte, you're right.
You know, Kunta Kinte.
Yeah.
You know, we probably, you know, collectively, we blocked that part out of our subconscious.
On purpose. Go ahead. Black History Month. Purpose. Go ahead.
you know, but you know, it's his role was excellent. It was excellent. You know, I mean, the part where he says, you know, I give you a choice. You know, either I cut your groin off, or I take your foot, stop you from running.
Yeah.
Because Kunta was a runner, you know.
Yeah.
And he took his foot. You know, took his foot. It's like, damn, bro.
And remember what he said when he did it?
What did he say?
He said, "What kind of a man could do this to another man?"
Oh, damn. I don't remember.
You remember that, yo?
No, I don't remember that, yo.
Yeah. 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 He said it, and I remember it fucked me up even as a kid, yo. I was like, damn.
Yeah, man.
Ugh.
Yeah, man.
But he was also in, just for clarity's sake, he was also in Let's Do It Again.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
And some other stuff. He was in Ricochet.
Okay.
With Denzel. Remember he played, I think,
right.
Did he play Denzel's father?
Probably.
Okay. Anyway, he's definitely had a pretty decent career. But yeah, your point well made is you know, is the those high points are going to be Good Times, Die Hard, Roots, and then Coming to America.
Right.
You know, and he's going to be in Coming to America too. The sequel coming up.
Right. Right.
The last category I thought about was the one plot and story forward deaths.
Mm.
So,
okay, ones that serve as a linchpin to get to a greater ending of the story.
Yeah,
of the story.
Yeah, it happens to turn the screw to push the story forward, or to get the character on their journey to becoming their greater self or whatever.
You okay, know. Well, I got one for you that I just thought of.
Go ahead.
Uncle Owen and
what?
And Aunt Beru.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Is it Owen and Beru?
Yeah.
Or is it Kenobi's death that actually propels Luke forward? Even though he only knew Kenobi for a day and a half?
Well, he's already an adventure. Like, well, but he had no reason to stay there anymore now, because he wasn't going to be a moisture farmer all of his life. He wanted to go into the academy.
You're right.
So the fact that you saw, you know, they were dead. It's like, okay, no point staying here now. I'm going to be like a Jedi like my father, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're right. So, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Of course.
You know, Star Wars, yeah, right.
who am I to question?
No, it's not the same.
But a Padawan.
Not at all.
But another one is that you mentioned earlier was Uncle Ben, Peter Parker's uncle.
A different Uncle Ben.
Right, right, exactly. If your name is Ben and you're an uncle, yo, you're going to get fucked up in a story, yo.
Pretty much, yo. It's a given.
Oh, man, you're going to catch a dirt nap if your name is Uncle Ben.
Pretty much, yo.
But, you know, obviously Ben's death propels Peter to become a hero. And to take his responsibility seriously, you know, in great power comes great responsibility.
Great responsibility.
You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another one I thought about was the actor who played T'Chaka in Civil War. Remember? He gets killed by the Winter Soldier, the explosion.
Right.
And that actually is what pushes T'Challa to, A, accept his mantle as the king of Wakanda, and also to really become the hero and the man that he becomes in the Black Panther movie.
Right. But that wasn't when a soldier explosion. It was Baron Zemo.
It was Zemo, yeah.
Explosion.
Yeah, it was actually Zemo.
Posing as. But yeah, you're right, man. Yeah, definitely. It was definitely a transitional point for him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that got him. And then the other one I thought of that was really good, and I watched this the other day, like I said, I was watching Lethal Weapon 2.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Martin Riggs that we get.
Right, right.
His wife has to die.
Right, exactly.
And then the secretary administrator for the South African consulate, that the character that Patsy Kensit played, she has to die.
Right.
For us to get the rigs that we get at the end of that movie. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, exactly. Without his wife dying, we don't get him as suicidal and mopey and you know, and just, you know,
on the edge. One bullet in the chamber.
Yeah, at all times. We don't get that. And so we kind of need that to happen in order for, and they call it, you know, fridging, you know, when you kill somebody's wife or somebody's girlfriend or whatever, so that the male hero can become whatever they call it, fridging them.
Okay. Okay. Damn.
And that's kind of essentially what they did with his wife, but you never saw her. Or, you know, I think you maybe saw a picture of her or something.
Right. Now, the South African liaison, she was in the second film.
Correct.
Not in the first film.
Correct. Yeah.
So he's still going to be Riggs. He still would have been Riggs for Lethal Weapon already. You see what I'm saying?
Well, for the first one, though, his wife had died. So, I mean, again, he was suicidal. That was what put him on a path to where he could meet, like, a good man.
Right.
And have that person, you know, like, give him some sense, an option, a shot at redemption. You know, because he's just like, oh, I can't pull myself out of this or whatever. And then in the second film, you know, he has the brief one night affair with the South African liaison, and then they kill her.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when he's driving. He's like,
Johnny, yeah.
Raj, I'm not a cop tonight. I'm not a cop anymore.
Right.
I'm not a cop. This is personal.
Right.
They killed him.
Right.
They killed her. And I gotta get him. Yeah. You know, fuck it. That, you know, that crazy Mel Gibson shit, yo. But
it was great, man.
Yeah.
It's a great scene.
It definitely was.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, talk about just some of the crazy, a couple of the crazy ones. Like, the whole getting shot up, like, just Swiss cheesed up.
Right.
It was hard for me to believe that they would still do that in Training Day. Like, just shoot them all up in the car. You know, the body's jumping because the bullets is hitting.
Right.
You know, and then
is that popcorn?
Yeah,
the popcorn in your chest.
You know, he falls over and like smoke coming out of the holes in his body and stuff.
Right.
But the first time I saw that was Bonnie and Clyde.
Okay.
With Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty.
Right.
Where they pull on like the side of the road and they're just sitting there and they hear something in the bushes.
Right.
And all of a sudden the G-men come out. And the bodies are just jumping, just getting riddled with bullets, just jumping.
Right.
And I was just like, wow. And they actually did do that. And, I mean, there's photos of it where it's like, okay, they, you know, but, yeah, yeah. But Clyde Barrow and Bonnie were terrible. They were horrible. They deserved it.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, and then the other one is Sonny Corleone in The Godfather.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where, and again, that's another one where it is a death that pushes the plot forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at that point, the Don had already been shot and he was incapacitated. And Sonny was kind of in charge, the oldest son, but he had the hot head and the temper. And so when he raced off by himself and he got to the toll booth and had been set up and they came out and he was, you know, James Caan, you know, with his overacting ass, he's all, which is kind of James Caan's thing, is to overact, you know.
Right. And you know what? That was so 70s, though, man. That was definitely a 70s like trope as far as when bullets hit you, you bounce.
Yeah, yeah.
Sell the sizzle. Make it look real.
Yeah,
you know?
And we went from that
feel the pain
to like the 80s, where if you get shot, you get blown across the room.
Right.
You know, feet all up in the air.
Those pyrotechnics.
All of that stuff, yo. But but you know what my favorite death scenes are, and we can end it up. Ended here in a few seconds, but
go ahead.
My favorite death scenes are the ones where somebody's been shot or something's happened to them and they just kind of fade out like you don't expect it,
right?
Like they're I didn't, and just kind of turn their head and leave their eyes open,
stop talking,
stop talking. He's like, oh, wow, right? You know, I think those are my favorites.
There's a couple like that. I'm trying to think of that got me. I think about to of course the that's not how I think I was thinking like Predator again, where Sam's character went, or what was his name, Bill Duke's character, I forgot his character's name, Go have me some fun. Go have me some fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, he gets into the under the log with. And he's like, I'm gonna crawl to the end over there on the other side over there, and we're gonna flush him out. So yeah, I see him. Let's do this. Let's get him. And he gets over there. And he looks at him. He's like, he's this pulsating mess. It's just
yeah, yo, it's just like,
like, damn, bro. And he turns around and Carl bites as soon thereafter. And Dylan gets it right afterwards, man. It's like, and he Wolverines him, yo.
Yeah,
he Wolverines him, dude. It's like, the claws come out.
Yeah,
he's like, he tries to go out, man. He turns around with his gun in hand. And he's shooting.
Yeah.
And he cuts his arm off. The gun's still shooting.
At yeah. Him. On the ground. From
yeah, yo. Great movie. Yo.
Yeah, yo. And even another one killed off screen is Sonny Landham.
Yeah.
When he takes his shirt off and cuts his chest, like he's like, okay, I'm about to man up. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger and the girl from the village and the other soldier who's been injured, they run off in the woods, and all you just hear is Sonny go, ah! Like, oh, Sonny gone, yo, Sonny gone.
Do you see the husk of his body hit the log, and sooner after the predator takes his spine out, dude.
Yeah.
And takes his head out. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was
so graphic. Yeah,
it truly is. But yeah, man. Some of these deaths, man. Like, again, they're so cartoony; they don't mean anything.
Right.
And then there are others where, even in a movie like Terminator 2, about a robot from the future, and you know, two robots from the fucking future. Let's just call it what it is. But Dyson's death was moving, and it was especially moving. Like, even now in modern day, if you go back and watch that sequence where Linda Hamilton's character, Sarah, like, shoots the house up, and she comes in and she's in fatigues, and she shoots Dyson, and she's, you know, she's creating all this havoc.
Wife and kids are there.
Yeah, and they're running around, and it's like a horrific, chaotic situation. And watching that now, with all that we know about the riot and the insurrection at the Capitol, and, you know, what these crazies out here are doing, where it's just like, okay, you know, somebody who comes in your house with guns and fatigues and tactical gear on, talking about, you don't know the truth. I know the truth. You don't know the truth. It's like, wait, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Right.
You know?
I'm from the future. What? Okay, this is crazy as fuck.
Right? But, you know, like, you know, watching that now, it's very, very different.
Yeah, it's jarring now, man.
You know, yeah, it's, you know, it just hits you in a different way. But.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.